Welcome to the 19th episode of the 5th season of the Ubuntu UK podcast. It's Tuesday, the 6th of November, and in this episode, we are going to chat about last week's UDS and interview Dirk Gorrison about random hacks of kindness. We will, of course, cover the latest news, events, bit about Ubuntu, tomorrow's technology today, and go over your feedback. If you're listening live, you can send us messages using the chat facility on the website and in the IRC channel. I'm Mark, and joining me tonight are, making a triumphant return to the show, Alan.
Yay!
Tony.
Hello.
Yay!
Good evening.
And Laura.
Yay!
Sorry, I didn't mean to sound less enthusiastic there. So, Alan, what have you been up to in your extended absence?
Drinking beer in Copenhagen.
That sounds expensive.
Yes, it is. We got the bill today.
How much was a pint of lager?
It was about £5 for a pint of Carlsberg. So it's not even something they imported. they make it down the road.
And, right.
Yeah. Wow. Well, they probably did make it over here and send it over there.
Did you see any murders?
In Copenhagen?
There's apparently a lot there.
Really?
Have you not watched The Killing?
No. Is that on telly?
Oh, dear.
No. Yeah, so yeah, I've been in Copenhagen for 2 weeks, so that was fun.
What were you doing in Copenhagen?
We'll talk more about that later.
Oh, shall we?
Yeah, okay, let's do that.
Tony, what have you been up to?
Went on a little bit of a weekend jaunt with friends of the show, Neil and Amy Ferguson.
Yay!
There it
is. So we had a nice time out, and we went to Monkey World. I went to a fireworks display and saw some tanks. And
you went to Monkey World?
Oh, did you go to the Tank Museum?
We did go to the Tank Museum, yes.
Oh, I've been there. Did they do an outside display of tank manoeuvres and stuff?
Yes,
big tanks going around in the dark, which was slightly
boring.
Unhelpful.
you could just hear them coming.
Yeah. And an announcer.
Yes. And we also played with my monster 14-inch... 14-inch sparklers, some of which I have here.
Yes.
Wow. Which are quite impressive, aren't they?
Great.
There you go.
Lovely. Oh, what you used to make your photos with rude words and people's names.
We didn't write rude words. Yeah. I think that was entirely Neil.
Oh, okay.
Indeed. Discreetly veiled, drawn over that.
Lovely.
Okay.
How about you, Laura?
I fixed my boots with Sugru.
Ooh, is this that weird pasty stuff that Alan bought some of?
Yes.
Yes.
And what had happened to your boot?
Laura holds up boot to
my
Yes,
Laura's now showing us her boot and pointing at the heel.
I can't see where you repaired that. That looks awesome.
Are you sure it's switched on? I can't hear a thing.
I can't believe it's not butter.
Well, yes, I've not tried them out yet.
Was there a hole there or something?
Yes.
Or did you drill a hole just so you could use some Sugru?
Now, the sole is very thin, and for some reason, the back of the fabric then kind of overhangs slightly, and if the ground's uneven, it's worn away.
Oh.
So basically, I extended the sole backwards.
Oh. Wow.
Yeah, it looks all right, so I'll see how well it works.
Yeah, it didn't look weird.
No. So it's good.
Bonus.
So, yes.
Mark, what about you?
I bought a new laptop.
Ooh.
Yes, that is
that
shiny.
One there.
It's very nice.
It's the one I have on my
it's
knee.
It's like
here.
A wedge of cheese.
It's quite wedge shaped. It's actually a bit of an optical illusion.
Mark holds microphone laptop up to microphone.
If you look at it side on,
it's all
not
about
actually,
the visuals tonight.
It's not actually as wedge shaped as it looks, but it is very visually appealing.
It is, yeah. It's very nice.
But yeah, basically my Asus EPC, which I've had for many years, has sort of given up the ghost. So I needed something new and portable, so I bought myself a Asus ZenBook, which is very nice and thin.
What size screen is it?
13 and a bit inches, I believe.
What does it run?
It's currently running Ubuntu Quantel.
Ooh.
12.10.
12.10, the latest and possibly greatest.
Does it work?
It works like a charm.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Awesome.
All the buttons work?
Except for the brightness... up and down buttons for some reason. You can
it
control.
It does look quite dull.
You can control the brightness. Oh, I can turn the brightness up. I just can't turn the brightness up with the buttons on the keyboard.
Sounds great.
Is there
a fix or bug for that?
I believe that. Well, I've.
This isn't Tony.
No, this is yeah. I reported a bug for a separate bug which has just been confirmed today. Although I know that that's fixed in the latest kernel.
Which isn't on that machine.
No. So the latest kernel that's in development for Raring, so 3.7RC3, fixes some bugs, but currently introduces some others. So
awesome.
Brilliant.
Hopefully, with the next version of Ubuntu, it will be working nicely, but
everything that I need works. So that's I good. Have no
Sweet.
Complaints
it's
at
nice
all.
Nice looking laptop.
It is.
So in between drinking beer, expensive beer in Copenhagen, there was also some time spent at the Ubuntu Developer Summit.
Ah, right, okay.
Yes. It was 4 days this year, and so there was lots of stuff packed into those 4 days.
Right.
Loads of sessions, as we usually do, loads of one-hour blocks throughout the 4 days, loads of different tracks, and loads of stuff to go to, and in between me doing, you know, other real work, I managed to catch a few sessions at UDS, and I've noted down a few of them here and thought we could have a little chat about some of them.
Okay, so what were the big themes at UDS this time around?
So one of the big themes was gaming, with the announcement of Steam for Linux coming, and also with some reports that Ubuntu 12.10 and 12.04 haven't been great for gamers in terms of video and audio performance and other things. They actually scheduled a whole bunch of sessions throughout the week about Ubuntu as a gaming platform, and started talking about all the specific issues that we have in Ubuntu and why those problems are there and how we can go about fixing them or mitigating them, and also how we can get those fixes back into the LTS release. So rather than just say, right, well, let's fix that in 13.04, actually get those fixes into the LTS, especially given that Valve have said Steam will be targeted for 12.04.
Mm. Yeah.
So, there's loads of interesting sessions on that.
Cool. So what things are going to be done in terms of graphics and sound fixes?
So there's some ongoing work on Compiz, something called unredirected windows, which is, yes, all very complicated.
I've heard that term before. I did understand it once.
Yes, me too. It all makes sense when they explain it, and then the information falls out of my head. It's so you can get good graphics performance and kind of like throw away the desktop while you're running a full screen game kind of thing. So you're not wasting CPU cycles doing desktop-y stuff while there's a game running.
Right.
Which makes total sense.
Indeed.
But we haven't had that enabled. It's possible to enable it, and the code is there, but we haven't had it enabled by default, because when you enable it by default, it uncovers bugs in the video drivers.
Right.
So, you know, there was then a lengthy discussion about, you know, what do we do about that? Do we enable this and just say, you know, go for it, enable it, and if you have a problem, you know, you have to disable it, and, you know, maybe put out newer video drivers for those that we can, or maybe have an option where they can turn it on or off, you know, more easily than being buried somewhere in, you know, gconf or Compiz Config Settings Manager or something like that. So there was talk about, you know, how we fix the things and also how we bring the settings to the surface that people need in order to enable or disable the stuff that, you know, matters to them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What about things like the fantastic shopping lens? Was that discussed at all?
Yes, that was a topic of conversation at UDS. We actually scheduled a session because, you know, there's been a lot of press about the shopping lens. And other
not
things.
All of it positive.
No, not at all. yeah. Well, you know, a little bit from column A, a little bit from column B. So we had some sessions on things related to that. So not just the shopping lens itself. There was things like the release process and how the fact that the shopping lens landed really, really late in the cycle meant that it wasn't tested as thoroughly as it could have been.
Yeah,
meant that we didn't have an option to disable it straight away, and that was created very quickly, which obviously wasn't tested as well as it could be if it had landed much earlier in the cycle.
Yeah.
So those kind of issues, which are relating to the shopping lens but are not unique to the shopping lens.
No, I was
because
say, a lot of those sound like they could have been rehearsed before.
Yeah,
Previous kind of things that have landed late.
Yeah, and other stuff landed late as well. It wasn't just the shopping lens that landed late. We had a whole bunch of feature freeze exceptions, and we had, you know, lengthy discussions with the release team about how we go about not doing that next time. You know, not having things land really late in the cycle, having things more thoroughly tested before they do land, and also changing the schedule completely. So
Actually, there's going to be more time for the developers to finish their work. So it's a process that isn't just don't land stuff late. It's don't land stuff late, but I'll tell you what, we'll give you a bit more time to do it. So next time around, you know, you're less likely to land it late anyway.
So are things landing late just because that's when they get finished, or is there a certain amount of time for PR, or?
So in the last cycle, the main reason why the stuff landed late, the shopping lens, was because that it was the specification was finished late, and the development was done late. So there was a short sprint where the final bits of the shopping lens were created, and that was done really, really late in the cycle, and not very long before it landed in the distro. And it was, you know, it was seen as an important thing to land in this release so that we could get it well tested. And you know, one of the problems is if we leave it until the next release and we put it into raring, we'll have another 6 months where nobody is testing it, or only a very small number of people are testing it, because relatively speaking, it's a very small number of people who run the development release. So getting it into the distro, okay, gives us a bit of flack and we get a load of feedback about it, and we can improve that for next time. And we can also, you know, fix the bugs that there are with it in the current release. But it also means we actually get the thing tested well.
So this approach of not having alphas and pushing back the feature freeze, is that a good thing? Is it going to help just by not having alphas? People often waited to the first alpha before they downloaded it and tested it.
Yeah, the alphas were a kind of checkpoint, and at which people would say, okay, alpha one is out, now I'm going to start testing the development release. Or some people waited for the beta, or maybe even later. One of the problems with doing those alphas and betas is we have freezes for the week beforehand. So having a freeze multiple times throughout a very short 6 month cycle, when you know there's a feature freeze that comes, you know, a little while before release, you've actually got a very short window in which you can do work, and short bursts in which you can land things in the distro. So by wiping out those freezes, so we've got continuous development going on throughout the cycle, people can constantly keep iterating over their development, and they don't have to stop developing something or rush something to get it in before alpha or whatever freeze is upcoming. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So is there going to be a kind of still a kind of point in time where things should be over the initial crazy release?
So
where people can be a bit confident that it's a kind of like an alpha.
Yeah, I think what we'll do is probably have some publicity around the point at which you would normally have an alpha.
Yeah.
And maybe we might have what you might call a soft freeze. So we might say, okay, we're going to say that this one on this day we've thoroughly tested, and we've gone through a 2 week testing cycle for that image. That's the one we're going to say go for broke on that one, and everyone start testing that image. It won't be, you know, an alpha, but you can kind of think of it like an alpha.
Yeah, because, I mean, from a development point of view, it'd be quite nice to know that you can produce an image that's tested where everything more or less has a chance of working.
And in fact, related to that, what we are doing is it's changing the way stuff lands in the distro so that it is much more thoroughly tested before it even lands in distro. Something we're specifically doing with Unity is in the last release with Unity, we would have developers working on it, and then we would say, okay, let's freeze the Unity trunk, and we'll package that up and we'll do a release. So we would had, you know, 6.10, 6.12, you know, 6.14, these releases of Unity. What we're going to do now is each time a developer checks in their code, it goes through an intensive set of testing and makes sure that it works and it doesn't break anything else. And lands in a PPA that means it's all packaged, so we know the packaging works, and then some more testing on actual machines, physical machines, before it semi-automatically lands in the distro, in theory, the next day. But could be the day after. So there isn't going to be a development for a week, and then we work on for a couple of days packaging it up, and then Unity lands in the distro. It's going to be, you know, you work on Monday, and you know what you did on Monday will be on people's desktops on Wednesday.
Yeah, that's good.
And so then if someone's running the development release, the idea is that when they hit upgrade each day and it pulls in all the new packages, that should never then, they should never then have a situation where they reboot and suddenly they don't get X
or something. Yeah, yeah, or, that's exactly the kind of situation we want to avoid, is also, you know, one package breaking another.
Yes.
So there's going to be lots of additional testing being done before it lands in distro to do things like do reverse depends checking to make sure that none of the packages that we depend on for this package get broken. So it's not just checking each atomic package on its own, it checks everything that it depends on as well, which is an awful lot of testing. There's a lot of infrastructure going in place to get all that working right now. But it's a huge amount of testing that gets done before it even lands anywhere near people's machines.
There was a bit of a sort of semi-announcement before UDS actually started, some rumors and videos flying around the internet about the Nexus 7 and how Ubuntu appeared to be coming to the Nexus 7. Do you want to tell us a bit about what happened?
It's here, it's now, it's ready, it's out, everybody can use it, it's wonderful. Brilliant. That's what I believe.
But you won't be getting one.
That's my understanding of the press release that was put out.
So at the Sprint the week before UDS, we were all holed up in a room and there was a team who were working on getting Ubuntu working on a touch device. Mm-hmm. And the device they chose was the Nexus 7 because it's relatively inexpensive. It's a known device and we know we can put Ubuntu on it. It's pretty flexible kind of device and it's common, you know, around the world. You can very, very easily get hold of one. Not because we want to put Ubuntu on tablets as such, and this isn't Ubuntu for tablets.
Right.
This is Ubuntu on a tablet form factor so that we can see if how well the core works on a tablet. So
this is things like does running Unity sap all the battery and kill it?
Not really. It's lower than that. It's more how does the core use battery? So, you know, things like Bluetooth, is that going to eat the battery up?
Right.
And, you know, all the other system services that start up, do we really need all of them? Mm-hmm. All these various processes that you get out of the box when you do a clean install of Ubuntu, do they really need to be there? And could they be rewritten in a more efficient manner?
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, we have one of the sessions, which was probably the most packed session of the whole of UDS, was a load of people came into the room, most of them brandishing a Nexus 7, which had already had Ubuntu flashed on it.
Right.
And sat there asking questions. They like boot it up and then run top and then asking the questions. Okay, what is this process? Why is it running? Why have I got one? Why is it eating 50 meg of RAM?
And
like building up a profile of those processes, which we haven't usually worried about so much because people have, you know, i7s with 8 gig of RAM, and this thing's only got 1 gig of RAM, I think it's got 1 gig.
You think so?
And a small amount of storage. So we have to start worrying about these things if we're ever going to bring out a tablet, which Marcus said, you know, by 1404 we'll have phones and tablets. So if we're going to do that, we need to start looking at these things. It's more of those kind of core things. So people like Colin King he's written scripts. He works on the kernel team for Canonical. He's written scripts that do intensive testing, and he's had one of these sat on his desk. And he's been running all four cores at full tilt for as long as he can to see how many hours of battery life he gets out of it. I think he gets something like 7 to 10 hours or something.
Really?
Out of it, which is impressive.
Yeah.
I've been getting 5 hours out of mine, but I think I haven't got the latest updates. And so they're putting all these things they're learning, they're putting into a PPA.
Yeah.
They're not going straight into the distro yet because we need to prove it all on this device. And then once we've proved it all, we can then put all those into the distro so that if people did want to put it on a tablet, they're going to have a better experience than they do right now.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So you've got an Nexus 7 there with Ubuntu on it.
Yes.
What's it like?
So there's a few bugs. It's not powered up at the moment. Oh. I can power up though.
That's going to have a look.
Out in the waves tablet at Laura.
It doesn't take long to boot. So there are a number of bugs, and the good thing is we're filing all those bugs. In fact, most of the bugs had already been filed before the announcement was made, because the guys who were building the image were already filing the bugs as they went.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a few kind of rather nasty ones, like the left mouse button gets stuck down sometimes.
That's one finger tap.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you tap and then you can't tap anything else. Yeah. Things like that.
That's a bit of a problem, yeah.
But and there's other like desktop-y type things, but those aren't the things we're most interested
in. But they're sort of things that you have to fix so that you can test all the rest.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Right.
The on-screen keyboard is amusing. The one we've got is the default Ubuntu one on board. And the initial version that we put on there, the theme consumed a vast amount of CPU because it has it has these gradients on the keys.
Oh, right.
And that was eating all the CPU. So it's learning about things like that. We never even knew that that was eating CPU. Yeah. And that will be eating CPU on people's laptops as well. Wow. So, you know, we're learning stuff about Ubuntu that because we're putting it on a device like this. And because everyone has exactly the same device,
yes,
it means it's very easy for us to reproduce bugs on you know, two tablets which are exactly the same.
Cool.
Okay, and very quickly, there are some plenaries that you might want to tell us how exciting they were.
Yeah, there were a whole bunch of those. At lunchtime each day, or just after lunch each day, we'd go back into the main room, and we had a bunch of plenaries. Eventually, I think they'll all be up on the YouTube channel, Ubuntu Developers. But they were live streamed at the time, so you may already have seen some of these. Probably the most interesting one for me, Drew Bliss from Valve Software.
Yeah, I watched that.
He came along to all of the Ubuntu as a gaming platform sessions at UDS. It was really good getting loads of insight about how Valve make software and how they test it and how they, you know, check that games get the most frames per second and all that kind of good stuff that we're going to need to do.
Yeah.
So that was a good one. Chris Kenyon, VP of sales at Canonical, gave a talk about how we're doing in terms of selling machines with Ubuntu pre-installed. And that went down rather well.
Cool.
Good numbers. And one of the interesting points that he that seems to have been picked up by some people is, I think he said in 2011, we shipped as many PCs running Ubuntu as Apple shipped Macs in around 2008, 2007. Which means we're behind them, but we're not far behind them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Barely 4 or 5 years behind them.
Which is pretty good. And finally, there was a good one from Evan Dandria, who, along with Matthew Paul Thomas, main people behind the Whoopsie app that crashes to Canonical so so they can analyze them and try and fix them. Errors.ubuntu.com is interesting to look at. And he gave a great long talk about how it all fits together, how it works, and some of the plans for the future in making error reporting more seamless and less invasive for the user.
Cool. Excellent. Well, it sounds like all that beer was worth it.
Yeah, needed it after all of that.
Now it's time for some news. Microsoft has launched Windows 8, the latest version of its desktop operating system that's now also aimed at tablets and other hybrid touchscreen devices. Has anyone tried it?
One of my colleagues bought two licenses for it at the weekend.
That's keen.
One for a laptop and one for... Apparently the licenses are really cheap for Windows now. They're like £30 or something silly.
Huh.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he was playing with it.
£30 more than Ubuntu.
Yes.
I've seen a number of reviews over the last like 48 hours where people have had a real go at the performance of Windows RT on tablets.
Oh, the ARM
version. The ARM version. Yeah, like someone showing typing in Word.
I've seen some. Yeah, Word seems to be a real problem on the Surface tablet.
It's first version of a Windows on an ARM device for ever, I think. So, you know, cut them some slack and I'm sure they'll fix those things.
Do you think it'll be able to take on Ubuntu?
No, cut them no slack. They should have it right there, Microsoft.
Do you think it could take on Ubuntu on tablets, given we don't have a tablet yet? Yeah.
You install Windows on a Nexus 7? I think not.
Kim.com, the former owner of Mega Upload, prior to seizures of his assets by the New Zealand police that were later deemed illegal, is launching a new file storage and sharing site called Mega. The new site will encrypt all files stored using keys that only the user has access to. .com's hope is that this security model will absolve the company of responsibility over the content of the user's files.
Let's hope so.
Well, isn't that all of those upload sites tend to be used, I'm generalizing slightly here, by people who want to share files with other people, not necessarily people putting a file up that they want to then get back later on. So they would need to share those keys somehow or have multiple.
Yeah, but the company would never need to have the key, which is the point. Because then they can't say, no one can say to them, you know what's in that file, you should take it down, or you should let people share it.
Right. Because nobody else could get... But The problem is that I could share a file. I could put a file that's encrypted with a key. Yep. Share the key on the internet with you.
Yep.
And someone from like one of the copyright legislation people could see that key in, you know, an IRC channel or on a web page listing of stuff, and then download the file and know that that file is what it is.
That's true. You have to be careful with your keys.
Yeah. Fun times.
Processor manufacturer AMD has announced that it will be selling 64-bit ARM processors from 2014, breaking the company's history of exclusively making x86 architecture processors and giving a new dimension to the company's rivalry with Intel.
Huh?
Because Intel doesn't make ARM processors and isn't planning to, apparently.
Yeah. And this is the first kind of big chip manufacturer to do ARM.
You say big chip manufacturer, think how many ARM chips are made.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Yes.
What defines ARM?
They're licensed by it. So ARM is a company that designs the chip, but doesn't actually manufacture them. And companies like TI will license the design and then create their own chip.
And ARM is a RISC architecture, so it's lower power because it has a smaller instruction set.
Yes.
Wayland, the windowing system aimed at X11, has released version 1.0. While not ready to replace X11, the milestone represents a stable API for the system, guaranteeing backwards compatibility for future releases. Which is nice.
There we go.
Good progress.
Windows Live Messenger, formerly MSN Messenger, looks set to be retired in favour of Skype.
Is this a good thing?
Aww.
Is it a good thing or not? It's not, you know, in favour of a non-free thing, but it was non-free.
Non-free
anyway.
Thing replaced by a non-free thing that runs on Linux.
It reminded me that Microsoft owned Skype, which was a bit sad.
You did used to be able to get open source.
Sad face.
You could get open source MSN clients.
Yes. I still have one.
Empathy and...
Yeah. But you can't get an open source Skype client.
Well, you
can get an open source front end which connects through the proprietary client.
Yeah. Well, it connects through the libraries. Yeah, there's an API, isn't there?
Could make you feel better.
Everyone I've run had to have Skype running anyway.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Finally, Valve Software have just announced the availability of the closed Steam for Linux beta. Over 60,000 people requested access to the beta, which currently includes around 24 games ported over natively to Linux.
Yay!
Yay!
Are you excited by this?
Yeah, look at that. Doesn't it look good?
Alan holds up laptop.
I'll hold my laptop to the microphone
there. Can you see
Alan
that?
Has the Steam beta.
Bit closer.
Are you Mark one of the, doesn't have the Steam beta.
Mark's are you one of the face. Lucky few, Alan?
Lucky thousand or so people who have it.
Out of 60,000 who applied, apparently.
Apparently the emails are going out now in batches. They're not sending them all out. So don't be worried. If you did sign up and you haven't got an email yet, you might get it. Or you might not.
They're doing a mail merge, basically.
Excel does take its time.
And that's the end of the news.
Hello, and welcome to Tomorrow's Technology Today. I'm Douglas Austin Cambridge. A good day to all our listeners wherever you are around the British Empire, or indeed, Chipping Sodbury. And it's good day to my delightful bouncy rabbit, Miss Deirdre Morris Oxford.
You're sounding rather more chipper than usual, Douglas.
That's because I'm on medication, Deirdre. In the future, pharmaceutical science will be able to cure all sorts of behavioural conditions.
Including congenital stupidity.
Including congenital stupidity? Whatever can you mean, Deirdre?
So what exactly are you on, Douglas?
It's called, let me see, lysergic acid diethylamide.
LSD?
Yes, my glorious fun bundle. Do mind your head on that flying elephant.
Douglas?
Why, Grandma, what big pink fluffy ears you have.
Douglas?
Yes, Nursey?
Where did you get your medication?
From my very good friend, Dr. Aesop Spasm, a renowned expert in new therapies. According to the good doctor, by the end of the century, we'll all be popping pills like there's no tomorrow. Flumblehoop.
And according to my good friend, Aldous Huxley, there may be no tomorrow if we're all medicated to the eyeballs.
Eyeballs? I can see them. Eyeballs everywhere. Are you looking at me? Are you looking at me? Well, I don't see anyone else here.
Douglas, it says on this bottle not to be taken with alcohol.
That's all right, Deirdre. I've only had a couple of whiskies. Wibble.
Dewglass, you had a couple of whiskies for breakfast. What else have you taken?
Mummy, I feel all light-headed. Why is Teddy trying to strangle me?
Dewglass!
Don't hit me, Father. I only took some Barbitol, Mary Joanna, and some of your snuff. Wibble!
Dewglass! 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 That's all from Tomorrow's Technology Today. Toodle-pip and God save the King!
I'm here with Dirk Gorrison, who's taking part in an event called Random Hacks of Kindness. So, tell us all about Random Hacks of Kindness.
Well, Random Hacks of Kindness, or ROC in short, was set up a couple of years ago by Google, NASA, Yahoo, and a couple of others. And as a forum, as an organization which would organize events worldwide, and the idea would being you bring together people from a programming, computer science, hacking background, together with people from international development, from NGOs, from the World Bank. And the idea would be, during these events, the software people, the programmers, would try to work on problems related to humanity, to international development, and try to do something for the greater good.
Okay, so this is the first one or a second one? How many times has it been run?
So ROC itself was established, I think, around 4 years ago, though I'm not quite sure. There are two global events every year. And every city, anywhere or any place all over the world, is free to host, apply to host for an event. So there's two every year. We're in Southampton, and I organized the first one in June, this past June, and I'm now organizing the next one in December. So it's the second event for Southampton, though previously I attended different ROCs in previous years.
And I think there's one in Oxford as well in the UK?
Not for December, as far as I'm aware. I've just found out, well, Exeter has recently put an application, so they're running one as well.
Okay, so random hacks of kindness, that implies the sort of social good thing that you were talking about. What sort of things do you work on over a weekend?
It can be quite a wide variety of problems. The main restriction is, of course, it has to be a problem which has some kind of social good, a social value. So this can be, for example, a local charity that works with Alzheimer's patients, and they need, for example, they would need some kind of smartphone app to help with that, or it could be an NGO like Oxfam. This was at the ROC in Oxford last year, I think. Oxfam, they're launching a poster campaign, and they would like to have an idea, you know, is our poster campaign really having an impact? And how do we measure that? And how can we collect data around that? And we'd like a website to visualize our different posters. It can be, we had in June here in Southampton, we had a researcher from the geography department who had satellite images taken by NASA, and he was interested in extracting what he called the normalized water difference index, I believe, which is a measure for the water content of plants. So given satellite images, run some post-processing to calculate the water, to estimate the water content in plants, and this can then be useful to farmers for irrigation and all kinds of things, and tracking deforestation and things. So what the team there did is they wrote a nice website, essentially. It was based on Node.js and on Mongo, which would pull in the satellite images, do the post-processing, generate this statistic, and present it nicely in a Google Maps type environment. And so you could, you know, it'd be very easy to look up a portion of the world and see what the water content was there, and then track it over time. And they're still continuing that.
If you're an organization and you have a problem like Oxfam, you want to assess how useful your posters are, or you're a researcher in geography and you want to find out how much water is in plants, how do you get the people who come along to ROC to work on your problem?
Okay, so what you first do is you find an event nearby, and there's 20 or so over the world, and shouldn't be too much of an issue. And what you need to do is you'd have to scope your problem. So you'd have to essentially have to write up 2 or 3 paragraphs, which is what the problem is about, why it's important, what kind of technology restrictions there are, if any. And you'd have to scope it in such a way that a team of 3 to 4 people can come to some kind of prototype in the space of a weekend. So it, you know, it can't be too ambitious, can't solve the world's problems. But it should be possible to come together, to put together a prototype of the weekend. So if you, you know, if you can formulate a problem statement that fits within the social good scope, which is quite broad, and you can write it down in 2 paragraphs, you can submit it to the location you're interested in. Just contact the organizer in Southampton, that'd be me. And and then typically you would come pitch it on site in person. You can pitch through Skype or remotely, though typically we always encourage people with problems to come physically on site. It just helps so much more.
So you submit your problem to a specific event. So you would submit it, in this case, to Southampton, to your event.
Yes, you can submit it to all events, and it just becomes one extra problem in the big problem database that ROC has. But then it just tends to get drowned. It's much, much better to work with a local event. You get much more chance your problem will actually be worked on.
Okay, so who are the people that actually work on these problems over the course of a ROC event? Are they all developers? Are they computer scientists? Are they general geeks? Who turns up?
You get a very interesting mix of people. Now, the focus of hackathons historically has always been on the programming side. So what you get is, you know, people typically are able to program in some form or manner, although the experience varies. I've had very, very new programmers who are just starting out. The majority of the people are programmers or computer scientists or computer science students or researchers in that field. But you also have people like who are more, they're closer to the problem side, and they, you know, they have a background in international development or management or the softer side as well. They're more interested in, of course, the problem and different ways to solve that, not necessarily in producing code, but they can provide valuable feedback in how to manage things or problems on the field and give an extra dimension. What I'd like to do with this event is also broaden it a bit more, so, you know, I work with a lot of engineers, for example, and they've expressed interest in this kind of event, but they say, well, I don't know how to program. But, you know, on the other hand, one of the problems, I spoke to a researcher who's from Southampton, but he works in a lab in Pakistan, for example, and they're looking for very cheap, high-quality water quality sensors. And, you know, they're just too expensive at the moment. But you can imagine a couple of engineers coming and they sit down for a weekend and try and come up with a design. So I really encourage everybody to attend. It helps if you have some kind of computer science background to help out with the code, but even if you don't really have that, you know, just to talk with the other people, to learn something, maybe you can help scope with the problem, maybe you can help do documentation or testing or just give feedback.
So what sort of commitment does somebody have to make to take part? It's a weekend, I think?
It's a weekend. So typically on the Friday evening before the weekend, there's a social, everybody's free to attend that and just chat and talk and get to know each other. Saturday morning starts off with the problem pitches, so every domain expert, you know, gives a pitch of 5-10 minutes, and then people form teams around the problems and work on it for a whole weekend. On the Sunday afternoon around 3, 4, 5 p.m. Everybody prepares a final presentation, and there's a bit of judging, and depending on the sponsors, there'll be some prizes for the best team. But the whole point is really collaboration, and there'll probably be some prizes, but the competition is not the main point. It's more the point of, you know, let's get together, let's learn from each other, let's learn something new, and let's do something useful.
I understand some of the places the hacking carries on overnight, but not here.
Well, we did in June, but I got into trouble with the university. I'm still trying to organize something, but it looks like between 11 p.m. and 7 a.m. we'll have to close doors. But I'm trying to do something about it, but university is not being very helpful.
Fair enough. Okay, so what sort of problems did you get proposed at the event in June?
June we had, so the problem I talked about with the geographer from here, so analyzing satellite images. I had somebody from Renewable World, which is an NGO around renewable energy. And I think we'll have that problem again this year, but it was around, so say if you're a country or a region and you have a certain energy requirement, How do you split that up between renewable sources and non-renewable sources, and which renewable sources you use, and where do you place them? It's kind of an optimization problem, but there's lots of data available and lots of metrics. And how do you aggregate that together into a nice website with sliders and things and overlays on a map? So there was that. There was also a project called Tarifa, which I initially worked on. It came out of a previous hackathon and then lived on afterwards, which is about civic reporting. So if you live in a country or a city where very poor civil, you know, there's very little infrastructure or formal services. So, you know, the use case we used was a slum. If you live in a slum and there's a bust pipe somewhere or blocked public toilets, there's no formal way for reporting these issues. So the idea was, okay, what if you have a very lightweight web-based system? And mobile phones are actually quite pervasive in Africa, and especially the cheap smartphones. And so imagine you would see a big problem with a bust pipe. You take a picture of a smartphone, it gets sent to a central site, and you, on the receiving side, the council would be running the site, and they'd have all these reports come in. And they'd have a nice dashboard with a map, and so where the reports are happening, they'd be able to prioritize them, act on them, get something fixed. And imagine they would fix the broken pipe, for example, that would get fed back to the person who actually reported it. You'd be able to give feedback. So in a way, similar to fixmystreet.com or Open311, civic reporting, linking citizens with government and making their reporting process easier, more streamlined. And so that came out of the sanitation hackathon last year. And I'm very happy to say now it's officially used by the government of Uganda, and they're using it in trial projects. So we're looking to expand into Tanzania, hopefully. But so that was in June, and people get to work on it again in December as well.
I was going to ask, you know, how many of these things just finish on the Sunday and nobody ever takes them any further, and how many really become something useful and a long life project like that one?
Well, I have to be realistic, and I think there's a lot of recent criticism on hackathons as well, that, you know, you come together for a weekend, people do something, and then they just leave and nothing really happens. And I think the majority never really gains a life beyond that. However, there is a minority that do continue. For example, you know, the example I just mentioned that's has a life beyond that. Also, it's hard to say, but there's always a couple. From every site, there's always one or two projects that are carried forward. It all comes down to the team and how interested they are, how motivated they are. But at least this is also something ROC has recognized. Since June, for the first time, they've also made available mentorships for the best projects. So, for example, the guys in geography, the problem I explained, they finished their thing at the end of the weekend. They sent in this application to ROC for further support to help make their project sustainable. There was only a limited number of, should I say, quote-unquote scholarships, but they managed to get it. And they were assigned a mentoring organization, which in this case was Geeks Without Bounds. And every month or so, they have a Skype chat, and they're followed up, and they get support. And it's not monetary at this stage. It's more about support and helping you to make your application sustainable. And so they're going through that. So there's options. So the majority usually ends up in a GitHub repository. But, you know, there was the experience, and it may motivate other people. But there are a number of projects which do live on, and the hope is to make that number as large as possible, of course.
So if people listening at home have had their interest piqued by some of the things we've talked about today, where can they find out more about this event or events across the world?
Well, as for ROC, there's a central ROC website, which is rhok.org, and it has a list of all the participating cities, it has a full list of problems, and there's all full details and registration there. If for some reason, you know, you're in a place where there's no event nearby, there's meetup groups like, I think it's called Hackathons and Jams. If you search for that on meetup.com, you'll find a very long list of events. Or if you just Google hackathon I think probably if you look for hackathon, you've just Google around you, there's plenty of events all over the place where we can work on this kind of stuff.
Cool. And you mentioned sponsors, so who have we got sponsoring this event?
So the sponsors are there to cover pizza and drinks and such, and maybe a prize or so, though it's not the main focus. In this case, I'm happy to say that Google has been kind enough to sponsor, as well as Microsoft. Microsoft also sponsored last year, where they donated a robotics kit for the winning team, and that was really well received, and they'll be doing the same again this year. Only just today I've been talking with ATAS, which is a company from the west of the UK, which does a lot of research into data mining and statistical prediction and things, and they're very interested, and it looks like they'll be sponsoring as well. And the university has also been kind enough to help out a bit.
I understand you've got some speakers scheduled for the Saturday, just doing some short talks.
Yes.
Who do you know is going to be there so far?
So currently we have three speakers lined up. This is just to kind of break the day a bit and give a bit of background into related issues. So Google is sponsoring, so we have somebody coming down from the London Google Development Group, who's just going to talk about what they do and their outreach programs and things. We also have somebody from Clean Web UK attending, and Clean Web is an organization which looks at how can we use technology and software and such how can you use that to solve problems related to the environment. They're more focused on environmental issues, so, you know, green technology and sustainability and that kind of thing. So we have somebody from CleanWeb UK coming down to give a short talk about what they're doing as well. They'll probably be pitching a problem as well. And then we have the founder of Crisis Mappers UK, who just lives just down the road, and she'll come down and give a talk about what Crisis Mappers UK, what they do, and how you can get involved.
Excellent. Well, it sounds like very worthy causes, and I'm sure lots of people will want to get involved and have a good time. And thank you very much indeed for talking to me.
Thank you very much. And anybody, if you hear this and you live in the area, I can strongly encourage you to come along. Even if you don't know very much about hacking or programming, you can do something for the better. It's a great way to learn new people and learn new skills, and I can really only recommend it.
It's time for the bit about Ubuntu.
Woo!
I have a cat dribbling on my hand. that's not the bit about Ubuntu. First up in the bit about Ubuntu is the wiki page that's been created for the Nexus 7 build. So if you have a Nexus 7 and you want to have a look and see how the Ubuntu runs on it and contribute to getting the core working well, you can go to wiki.ubuntu.com/Nexus7.
Cool.
Excellent. And is that going to be something that, you know, is ready for release right now by any chance?
How do you mean?
As in, you know, it's ready for release, it's ready for consumers just to install.
Yeah, if they don't mind the fact that you can't press any buttons and there's loads of bugs in it. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Knock yourself out.
It's
not aimed for end users. It's aimed for developers to help us get the Ubuntu core working.
But I read on the internet that it was ready.
Yeah, you read wrong.
Stop.
They're
not ready.
The internet was wrong.
The XKCD 386. Someone on the internet was wrong.
Right. Excellent. Okay. There's also news about Victor Palau.
Yeah, he's one of the team who's been working on the Nexus 7. So he's been posting. I put this in there just so that people could maybe bookmark his blog if you're interested in hearing more about performance. He's been looking at things like running browser benchmarks on the device to see how it works. So, you know, he is looking at, you know, real world usage, you know, in a browser, not just the underlying core stuff as well, seeing how responsive it is and so
on. It's interesting that Chrome on Ubuntu on the Nexus 7 outperformed Chrome on Android on the Nexus 7.
Yeah, that was quite funny. Yeah.
Yes, they're kind of inconclusive results in a way, aren't
they?
Yeah.
I think it's
there are lies, damned lies and benchmarks after all.
Yes, exactly.
Not as good as Hugo's random benchmark.
No.
I ran that on this the other day, actually, just to see how I compared. It was, a lot better than
my
machine.
How long did it take to run?
I can't remember. I'll do it in a minute.
So for those that don't know, Hugo's random benchmark, Hugo Mills is a member of our LUG, and he created a ridiculous not a benchmark.
Yes.
Which basically you time how long it takes Perl to count to a billion. And everyone in the lug decided instantly to run it on all their machines. And we now have a page. If you search Google for Hugo random benchmark, you'll find a page with loads of machines sorted in order of performance. It's completely ridiculous. It doesn't cater for multiple cores or anything like that. It's just daft. But it's good fun. I ran it under Ubuntu on the Nexus 7.
Here we go. I get 4.5 seconds.
That's pretty good. That's near the top.
I looked at the list. I can't edit the wiki though, so I'm not putting my score.
Nobody can. It's broken. So it took 33 seconds on the Nexus 7.
Uh huh.
Cool. There you go.
The Electronic Frontier Foundation has posted criticisms on its Deep Links blog over the privacy implications of Ubuntu's new shopping lens.
And the privacy implications are? It's to do with the artwork. Although the actual request for the search terms are proxied, your computer still requests the actual artwork and the images directly from Amazon.
Yes.
So they could potentially be working.
It's possible someone could infer.
Yes. They have an interesting screenshot which where someone had searched for a term, and while they haven't got some of the results which they might have on their computer returned, they've got some related results from Amazon returned.
DVD cover.
Yes, and films with a certain word in the title, and so on.
So a lot of those are being fixed. Like earlier on, before I drove down here, one of the guys in the loco suggested I search for a particular type of soup. It's called cocker leaky soup.
Right.
Suggested I search for that because when he searched the other day, it popped up some unwanted stuff. Not cocker leaky soup. That is a genuine soup, by the way.
Was it mulligatawny soup?
Gazpacho.
Brilliant.
Hot soup action.
but it was fine. Anyway, the point is that it's not perfect. There are bugs in it, some of them are being worked on.
And at the bottom of the article, there's a list of what EFF wants from Ubuntu, which including disabling the online search results by default, explaining what happens to search queries and IP addresses, making the search results tab of the privacy tab let users toggle on and off specific online search results rather than it being
a global switch, rather than
being online stuff or not online stuff. But it does give them some sort of compliments for actually, taking the biting the bullet, as it were, and doing new stuff.
Yes. Yes, but not in the way that they've done it, essentially.
Basically. Well, the thing is, all of the things that the EFF raised, we already knew. There was nothing in it that was, oh my God, it's leaking my passwords or anything like massively alarming. It was all stuff we already knew about. We have bugs filed about.
Yeah.
Whether we're going to fix them or not, I don't know. I mean, some of them are tricky ones for us to deal with, like, revealing how we deal with IP addresses on the back end systems, and we have to talk to our internal IS people about that kind of stuff. But, there's nothing that kind of leapt off the page. It wasn't as alarming as people make it out to be. Yes, it was the EFF, and yes, they've chosen to have a look at it, but that makes sense. It's the kind of thing they look at. And, it's good that they did, because it was a pretty comprehensive, well-written article.
Cool.
And finally, in the bit about Ubuntu, the Canonical design team heard you like design, so they've redesigned their design blog. So now you can read about design with a new design.
Excellent.
It looks really nice.
They've got pictures of themselves.
Yeah, they've got loads of pictures of themselves. Nice pictures of themselves. Not pictures of themselves like you would see from, the post-UDS party. These are all
What were you dressed as this time?
Me. Oh, we all went as Vikings.
I was going to say, what?
We had a big box of Viking helmets, and the bus that took us there was Viking buses, and we booked out a bar in central Copenhagen called something McGee's or something for the whole night, and the band played and we did some karaoke. There are photos online of this.
I think I saw one or two photos of karaoke.
Yes,
it was good. Fortunately, no sound.
It's nice way to unwind at the end of UDS.
Very disappointed the design blog doesn't have a single pair of orange sunglasses. Not even.
And it doesn't even show people using a Mac.
Exactly.
It can't possibly be right.
How will they maintain their credibility with the community?
And finally, in the not about Ubuntu, Linus Torvalds has posted a brief review of KDE on his Google Plus page. He describes the overall look as cartoony and criticized some of the default settings, such as desktop widgets displaying configuration controls when moused over. He summed up that he was mildly amused by the sheer whimsicality of it all.
I'm sure that was taken in the spirit in which it was meant.
Well, yeah, I kind of agree with him. I've always thought KDE looks a bit like a bad shareware app from 1990. But, you know, that's just my personal opinion.
What do you think, Mark?
I don't think that he was wrong in many of the things he said. It doesn't mean that I don't still like KDE. But, I mean, yeah, there are some widgets on the desktop by default, and when you mouse over them, even if you're just trying to use the widget, it will pop out with move this, rotate it an arbitrary amount, or configure it, when, generally speaking, when you put your mouse over it, you put your mouse over it to use it, not to move it around. So, yeah, I see his point.
But then the flip side of that is we have notifications that you put your mouse over and you can't click on them. You can't do anything with them.
Your laptop is being thoroughly licked.
Oh, man.
And now it's time for your feedback. One Stuart Ward pointed out this to us.
I was looking at QR codes and I came up with this wonderful command. It displays the date as a QR code, so you'll need to get out your phone and use the barcode reader to see what the time is. And you could even put this in a loop so that the current time is always displayed in a format not readable by humans. So I tried it. We'll put the actual command on the website. I tried it and it flashes up QR code for a second. So I hacked it and changed the 1 to a 5.
Whoa, you are so elite.
I know. So then it actually stood on the screen for 5 seconds, which
was that,
gave me...
Was that long enough for your phone which to gave focus me time on to, it?
Yeah. Well, 1 second, I was just like, oh, gee. Trying to get my phone out.
What practical applications does this undoubtedly wonderful thing have?
Huh?
Correct answer.
I see.
Kevin O'Brien emailed to ask for a volunteer.
Ohio Linux Fest is looking for someone to step up and take on the role of volunteer coordinator. No previous experience is required. This could be a great opportunity for someone who would like to be involved with a major event and help give back to the open source community. If anyone is interested, please email news@ohiolinux.org. Step to it, people.
Thea left a comment on our website to say,
is MS Windows 8 a good opportunity for Ubuntu or any other willing distro to try and capitalise on?
Yes.
With Win 8 looking so different to its predecessors, could it be a chance to market to the masses?
Yes.
Something along the lines of, if you have to change, make it a good change. Insert distro name here.
Ubuntu.
Well, they've already done that, really, with the whole Windows 8. I mean, there's more to do. Keep reinforcing that message, but it's not a trick that Ubuntu has missed.
Yes.
Indeed. With the whole don't jump to Windows 8, jump to Ubuntu
thing. What? The what? What?
The thing on the website.
The thing on the website that wasn't on the website for very long.
Was it not?
Was it gone?
It went, yeah. It wasn't a very Ubuntu thing.
What?
It's a bit negative campaigning, isn't it?
It was a bit, yeah. It wasn't a very Ubuntu thing, so it got removed.
Oh. With
I think it was avoid the pain of Windows 8, wasn't it?
Still, did it last longer than PayPal on the donation page?
I don't know.
Is that gone?
But I took a screenshot of that avoid, because I thought it was quite funny, avoid the pain of Windows 8, shared it on Google Plus. It's like the single most shared thing I've ever had. Like, 2,500 people shared it, and then like a minute later it was taken down from the website. So yeah.
All because of you.
Yeah, not a fan of squares, come to Ubuntu. Etc. Pagoff emailed to say,
I noted during your program this week that you raised the question of Ubuntu replacing Windows. I have both on my computer, but I find myself forced to use Windows for the DRM stuff, syncing my iPod, iPad, Netflix, and other streaming, and using the downloads of audiobooks and ebooks from my library.
Here's a clue. Don't buy DRM encumbered formats and you won't have that problem.
Richard S, sorry, in our RSC channel, I just wanted to make sure I got his name correct, has been saying something similar. He's
Richard S.
Richard
and Richard Matthew S.
Not Richard Stallman.
Richard_S_.
In our IRC channel has been saying that he's been trying to move, but I was interested in moving back to Linux, having tried it about 4 years ago. Currently a Windows user and, you know, would like to be able to use his iPod and, you know, GPS and things like that. And it's not an unreasonable request to make.
Yeah, totally right.
And he's a World of Warcraft fan as well, so he can't use that properly under Linux.
Doesn't that work under Wine? I thought.
Apparently, yes, a bit. Mm. So, yeah. But yeah, an interesting question, and it's one of those things that doesn't seem to go away, unfortunately.
Slowly goes away, but yeah, takes time.
Yeah. And we've had this voicemail.
Hello, this is Steven, your counterpart in the Ohio Loco. There's so many things I could say, but I'll leave it at this. In episode 5-18, Around the Ecosphere, what was that rattling? Did someone have a baby rattle? Was there a tambourine practice going on? Did a dog or a cat have a new bell on? What was that in the background of the podcast? Am I the only one to notice it? Did you even notice hearing it? Wondering minds. Have a great show. And remember, guys, it's election day in the USA. So I'm not listening live. I'm a little bit occupied. Have a great day, guys.
What was the noise?
It was the podcasts.
It was one of the podcasts, the one that's just been licking Alan's laptop, I think. Or possibly the one that's now asleep with her head on the mixer controls.
This is what we work with.
We have cats in the studio every week.
Yeah. How do they get in here?
If we lock them out, they just make even more noise out the back. You know, potentially bring in things.
Still, it's better than a dishwasher.
It's more melodic than a dishwasher. But yes. Oh, and yeah, so good luck with all our American listeners with the elections today. Make sure you vote. Vote Bartlett. That's my motto. And
okay.
Two blank staring faces. West Wing. Go.
Is that a thing on the telly?
Yeah. It was.
That's all for this episode. Thank you for listening. You can find out how to get in touch with us on our website, podcast.ubuntu-uk.org, where you can find our voicemail numbers and Twitter feed, Facebook and Google Plus pages, and IRC channel. Let us know what you think of the show, or give us your thoughts about Ubuntu and the community around it. Join us on Tuesday, the 20th of November, for our next live broadcast.
Indeed you do.
Yeah.
Awesome.
What have we got lined up for then? Who's going to be there?
We've got an interview.
Me? Yeah, I think I will. Yeah.
You think?
Ooh, an interview. Yeah. That's unusual.
Yeah. Well, we haven't got an interview. We will do an interview. Oh, so it could all fall through yet.
It doesn't usually. No. Actually, I've got another interview lined up.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Interview-tastic.
Then we might not need to be here at all.
Awesome.
And we're not long till Christmas either.
Can we replace you with a bot that does all this?
A small shell script.
Yeah, because that worked well before.
Right. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye.